podcast for all your running needs.
Ned, he was a terminally happy guy. And Ned, he ate a moldy pumpkin pie. And Ned, he thought that he just couldn't die. And Ned, he laughed so hard it made me cry.
Welcome to the Run, Run, Live podcast, the podcast for runners, wannabe runners, and mid-packers of all shapes and sizes who just want to strap on their favorite pair of shoes and get out there. This is not Chris, your host. This is Mimi. I'm the guest announcer this week. I'm a wannabe runner currently doing the Couch to 5K program, also known as C2 5K. When you're done listening to the Run, Run, Live podcast, come visit me at, well, my own blog is too boring to mention, but I like to hang out at the forums at c25k.com. It's not my site, but I love to visit and chat with other C25kers and C25k graduates. They really help me stay motivated, and I want to give a big thank you to everyone there. If you want to start a running program, check out C25k. That's the letter C, the number 2, the number 5, the letter K.com. So, wherever and whenever this episode finds you, I hope you're doing great, and I hope you're getting your run in today. I know I'm getting my run in. You ready to have some fun? Come on then, let's go for a run.
This episode of Run Run Live is brought to you by Murphy Pharmaceuticals and the new anti-apathy therapy from Mobilify. Man, I just can't get up off this couch to go for a run tonight. I've got no energy, and I think I tore a muscle in my right leg. I'm just going to eat Cheetos and watch CSI until I develop couch sores.
Bill, I used to feel that way too, but I found the answer. A daily dose of Mobilify anti-apathy therapy gets me up and going. In fact, my leg's been broken, and I have a hip fracture, but just ran 200 miles to Vermont to buy some maple syrup.
Wow, that sounds really great. I could use the boost, but is it safe?
Of course it's safe. In fact, Mobilify is handcrafted from all-natural yak bladders by your trusted friends at Mercury Research.
Well, in that case, put a couple hits in my Cheerios and let's get it on, baby.
Mobilify is not intended for elderly people, those with heart disease, nursing, or pregnant women, or those who expect to become pregnant. Side effects include manic episodes, increased likelihood of stroke or and renal failure, and big freaking purple spots on your behind!
Murky Pharmaceuticals, where the patient comes first.
Hello and welcome to episode 62 of the Run Run Live podcast. How is everybody this week? It's so exciting to see all the people getting ready for their spring races. Big doings at the Chris Runner House this week. Know how many miles I got in last week? Zero. That's right, zero. And I took about a week off to let my calf heal. Thank you for all the concern tweets and emails and kind words. I promise I'm okay. It's just a little tweak. I'm basically indestructible. My kind was bred to dig potatoes and peat bogs in the rain. You know, it's tough peasant stock. I'll be fine. But thank you for the concern. I mean, I've never met most of you guys, but, you know, feel like family. Here's another example. I've been trading emails with Coach Ken from the Running Stupid podcast. And so when I got out to San Francisco last week, I shot him an email and said, hey, Ken, you know, you want to meet up or something? And he was busy. And he had a 50K to run, so he told me Friday night, because we had a couple hours to kill before we went to the airport. He said, go to my restaurant, and ask for my wife. So I did, and Mrs. Coach Ken took wonderful care of us, and the food at his restaurant, the E&O Trading Company, was unbelievable. It was fantastic. I got to tell you, those fritters they talk about, oh my goodness, these corn fritters to die for. It was really good. So I got to do something nice for him. And of course, I got the all-day orange running stupid kazoo. So now when I say Dean Karnassus, I can say Dean Karnassus. So listen to the Running Stupid podcast and support Coach Ken, because he's a sweetheart. Jetting down to Atlanta tomorrow. It's Friday night. and I'm jetting down to Atlanta tomorrow to run the ING Marathon with the Trilogy Boys, and I just went out and bought a new flip video camera, and so far it's cool, but I think I'm going to be needing a new, bigger hard drive for all these super huge files it makes. But so how's my calf? You're just going to have to listen to the show. I got a good interview for you with a guy who's the race director for an indoor marathon in Wisconsin. Yeah, you heard me right, an indoor marathon. So I got to tell you, it's Friday night. I'm running out of steam, so on with the show.
It almost feels like there's a whole bunch of tight muscles around where the little tear is.
Well, and you mentioned the term adhesions. That's what you know, the tissue would do, is just lay down a crisscross patchwork of scar tissue, you know. And by doing the, you know, the deep focused work, it helps organize the scar tissue.
Sure.
So that it actually, you know, functions more in line with the muscle fibers rather than being restrictive. This was a week ago?
Yeah.
This is perfect. Perfect timing. I'm so glad we'll be able to nail this down.
Yeah, because
it's quick, by email like that.
You know what?
Like, crap, I gotta get to Chris. I've been so busy.
You know what was really cool? Is Saturday and Sunday I was working in the yard, you know, just with my my old trail shoes on, and it really loosened it up.
Working in the yard?
Yeah, like just sort of a non-specific use of the legs, just being active seemed to really loosen up the calf.
That's good. So I'm just doing a combination of with the fibers and then cross fiber too.
All right, so here I am. This is probably the biggest run of the year for me. You say, Chris, you've done 20 milers. You ran 37 miles, 35 miles to work. Those weren't big runs, yeah, but this is, took 7 days off with some sort of small tear. Swelling's down. Got a nice massage from Jill last night. And so now I'm going to walk a little bit here, put a little warm-up, did a little stretching, see if I get the green light. Worst case, it's horribly painful and swells up again, and my marathons are in question. Best case, it's a, oh, okay, good, cool. I'll tell you what, it's ironic. We're ironic, aren't we? If I put that much time into stretching and warming up, normally, I'd never be injured. So, we'll check in, man. Nice day, about 45, sunny. I'm at work, a little bit of a breeze, but, yeah, it's ugly running around here, all roads. A lot of dirt in the springtime. But the snow's all melted. So maybe I'll find some money. That'll be good. I like money. Bye.
And now for the equipment check.
All right, so I'm working without a script here. You heard me getting a massage, a little bit of my massage there with Jill. You want to, if you're going to put any time into being an endurance athlete, you got to find yourself a massage therapist, a competent one, somebody who knows what they're doing and is willing to go deep on you. And it's the best thing in the world because they really understand the underlying muscle structure and tendon structure and the mechanics of the body. A certified massage therapist, they've gone to school to understand this stuff. And it really, I mean, I can't, you know, okay, again, it could be the placebo effect, but whenever I get tuned up by Jill before a race, I've always qualified. So, you know, what can you do? God love the placebo effect if it is, but she... I tell her, you know, we work together. I tell her what hurts and how it hurts and where I'm having troubles. And she says, shows me the pictures in the books and says, this is the muscle that's giving you problems. This is why. Here's what's going on. And then she works it out. So you want to do it like 7 days before your event so she can, so they can get deep and mess things up and you still have time to heal and flush all the waste products out of your system. And then you can get a rub down after a race too, but if you notice after a race they're not going to go deep, they're just going to try to push some of that trash out of the muscles. and help you recover faster. And I'm all for that, too. We usually have a lady in the room with us down the Boston Marathon. So there you go. Go get a massage and put a massage therapist on retainer.
Hi. Sorry for the noise. Fairly industrial where I work, obviously, right? Hey, so yeah, I mean, I can feel it, but there's no, like, searing pain. It's like an ache. I can feel it when I toe off. I think definitely if I went out and did some speed work, the thing would pop. But the question is, how's it going to react after the run? So I can feel it, but I can feel it more on the uphills where I'm toeing off. But if I run a little flat-footed and take it easy, yeah, it's not... Yeah, you know, if I didn't know it was there, it would barely register on my pain meter. So let's give it a couple more. I'm going to do 5 today, slow, a little bit of walking. I think I can easily hold an 8, 8:15, 8:30 for the marathon. As long as I don't, you know, toe off, I think it's going to be fine. Just run a little flat-footed. Become a heel striker again. All right, I'm off. We'll check in.
And now for our featured interview.
So, Chris, I was asked by one of my people that I know from this podcast to get in touch with you because you do an indoor marathon. Is that
correct? Yep. It's the Instep Icebreaker Indoor Marathon is the name of it.
Okay, so this just blows my mind that you run an entire marathon indoors. So you guys, is this held up in Wisconsin?
Yeah, it's in Milwaukee. It's at the Pettit National Ice Center, which is one of, I believe, 3 Olympic-size ice ovals in the United States and probably one of less than 10 in the world. And around the ice oval, they've got a running track.
Okay.
So it's pretty big. It's 450 meters, just about. So it's a pretty big track.
Okay. So it's about the size of a regular running track, a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. An outdoor running track. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's mm-hmm. not too bad. You know, I was picturing in my head, you know, something like at the local YMCA, doing, you know, I don't know, 1,000 laps at 50 meters a lap, you know?
There are a few indoor marathons like that that I know of, but this is, it's a much bigger venue, so you're not, it's 94 laps, so you're not turning as much as some of these other ones. There's one at St. Olaf College in Minnesota that I think is one of the first indoor marathons, and it's called the Zoom Yaya. I think they've had it for 4 years now, and that's 120 or 140 laps, or it's quite a few laps.
That's crazy.
Yeah, so and this one, you know, 94, a lot of people, 94 laps, that's nuts. And 100 runners, and it's going to be congested, and it actually was not boring. Nobody complained that it was monotonous. I knew it wouldn't be, because I run there a lot of Saturdays in the winter. I'll do 20-mile runs there, training for Boston or a spring marathon, and it's not boring at all. There's a lot going on. There's speed skating going on. There's two full-size hockey rinks inside the ice skating oval, so you've got some hockey games, all kinds of stuff going on to keep your mind occupied, and keep it away from the monotony of going in circles for 3 or 4 hours.
You know, it's crazy. I get 1,000 questions in my mm-hmm. mind that are popping up talking mm-hmm. about this. Now, is it a bank track? What's the surface like?
It's flat. It's a rubberized, very thin rubberized surface over concrete. So it's not, it's not a real forgiving surface, but it's no different than running a marathon outside, probably.
Okay, so it doesn't have the built-up corners like you would in the old days, in the old, the indoor tracks.
Nope. Nope. It's a two-lane track, flat, track around an Olympic ice skating oval. There's a wall, like a padded wall, that separates the oval from the running track. So if, you know, when the ice skaters take a spill, which they do from time to time, they just slide into the wall and don't even get out into the running track.
Okay, how wide is it? Like 6 feet?
It's two lanes that are probably 4 feet each, so maybe 8 feet wide, yeah.
Okay.
And it's enough for three runners wide. You wouldn't want to go four wide.
And you put 100 runners on this?
Yeah, well, the 100 was the limit. I think there were probably about 20 no-shows. I think we started 84 people, so 16 no-shows, and about 74 finished. So, but, you know, again, those of us who run at the Pettit Center regularly know that 100 would not be a problem at all. In fact, next year I think we're going to up the limit to like 120, knowing that we'll have 20 no-shows, so we can get 100 on there. Because it's really not, I mean, sure there are times where, you know, you're trying to pass and it might be too wide, it might be a struggle to pass, but for the most part it's not an issue at all, the number of people.
So if you're going three abreast at the start, you must have a corral that's like, what, 40 people deep?
Yeah, that's pretty much what we did. We just told people, hey, fast people get in the front, slow people get in the back, everybody else fill in the middle, and it worked out perfectly. And there was not an issue at all with the start. And, you know, I'm looking back at now at pictures and video of the start, I see that the first, second, and third place finishers were right there in the very front. So they kind of knew that, they were going to be up there at the front.
That's amazing. So what's the speed range in there?
Well,
that's fastest to slowest.
The guy that won did it in a 2:37.
That's pretty fast.
Yeah.
That's like Brian, a 6 minute mile, right?
Pardon?
That's like a 6 minute mile.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly 6 minute miles. His name is Brian Schneider. He's from Madison. I think he's like 23 years old. And he's actually, I think that might have only been his like second marathon, but he's training for Boston and he wants to finish in the top 100 in Boston. So he's an excellent young runner and wanted to just kind of use this as a training run in a way. And another guy who's his training partner in Madison he didn't show up, Joe Currian. He's one of the top runners in Wisconsin. He got injured a couple weeks before the race and didn't run, which was unfortunate for Brian because he had to run alone the whole time.
Yeah.
And then on the low end, there are a couple guys that finished in over 7 hours.
Okay, so would you say his name was Brian?
Yeah, Brian Schneider.
He must have been running through a parking lot with traffic cones on it, doing 6 minute miles.
Yeah, he was. But
he's
no.
got there doing 15 minute miles.
Excuse me, pardon me. Yeah. Well, really not, because we had a system in place where the faster we told people, treat it like the freeway. You know, if you're always stay in the outside lane unless you're passing, and it worked perfectly. You know, Brian pretty much stayed on the inside lane the whole day and pretty much had it to himself. I mean, I never saw a time that he had to slow because of traffic, nor did I see that for any of the runners. It's a big, big track, and it worked out perfectly where there were no complaints at all about, you know, traffic problems.
Yeah, it would have to be big enough that you wouldn't have the centrifugal force on the corners. So I know some of the inside tracks I've run on, it actually, if you go much faster than a 6:30 or a 6 minute pace, you actually get thrown off the track in the corners, you know? You have to take the corners wide
when
you run into the walls.
Yeah, so, none of that.
All right, so how do you figure out what lap you're on? How do you know when you've run 26 miles?
Okay, well, it was all chip timed.
Okay.
So you had a chip on your ankle. It was one of those.
You had one mat, and it just clicked it off every time you went by.
Yep. The mat was at the finish line. The start line and the finish line were two different places because we needed to measure it 26.2 miles. By the way, the course was certified. It was USATF certified. We had measure come in and do the measurement.
So you could run a Boston qualifier on this course?
Well, no.
Well,
we were told, I actually inquired a few times of the people at Boston and never heard back from them, but I was told by the guy who does the one in Minnesota that they told him that an indoor marathon will not qualify for Boston. Now, after I get a couple years of this done, I'm going to go back to the people at Boston and show them times of my runners and say, hey, look, these guys aren't running it any faster than they do outside. I think it's unfortunate that they're not accepting it, but, you know, whatever. It's a new concept.
Yeah, Chris, it's just Boston. Don't take it personally. They're just grumpy people.
Right, you know, right.
I was talking to somebody last night about the Hoyts, you know, the Rick and Dick Hoyt.
Sure, yep.
Everybody knows them, right? They're famous.
Yep.
Well, Boston wouldn't let them run. Even though Dick had a qualifying time pushing Rick, Boston wouldn't let him run.
Wow.
For a couple of years, and they finally let him in, even though he had a qualifying time. So, and, you know, they've always been really slow to adopt. But
well,
I'll get you McGilvery's.
Sure. Well, I say I'll have to remind them of that, of the Hoyt thing, you know, when I go back to them. But no, I do think eventually they'll accept it. I mean, if they look at these times, I mean, it's not like people are running out of their mind. In fact, I compared some of these people's times with a recent other marathon of theirs, and they're all over the board. A couple of them are right on, a couple were faster, a couple were slower. So I don't think it's any noticeably faster inside.
Oh, I got more questions bubbling up here. So clockwise or counterclockwise?
We went counterclockwise. Or no,
counterclockwise.
I'm sorry, clockwise.
Oh, you went clockwise. I was going to say, it's Western European. You got to go clockwise.
Yeah.
And you didn't blow a whistle in the middle and have everybody turn around the other way for what?
No, we did not. And let me back up that last question. It was counterclockwise.
It was counterclockwise.
Yes, positive.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm trying to play that back in my mind. It was counterclockwise. No, the one
but
in Minnesota.
That's opposite of what most people would run on a track.
Yeah, and that's the protocol at the Pettit Center. It's always that same direction. Just the way they do it. The one in Minnesota, they actually did the blow the whistle kind of thing. Next time you hit the start finish line, you turn around and go the other direction. That worked out well for them. Well, their track's a little bit smaller than ours, and we didn't. With the timing mats too, I think that would have made it virtually impossible to do something like that.
Now, with the timing mats, was there some sort of display to tell these folks that they're on lap 94 or lap 92?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, back to that question. What we did was we did two things. We had a group of volunteers at the finish line who would give runners their counts. They're standing right next to the scoring table.
Right.
There's a computer there. The scorer has lap counts for everybody.
Yep.
So we told runners you can request a lap count, and the next time around we'll give it to you, and that worked out perfectly. Or sometimes we just randomly told them, hey, you're on lap 43. But that was pretty hard to do. I mean, there was all constantly people going by, so it was pretty difficult to shout them out. But if somebody asked us, you know, we'd look at their bib number, write it down, and then go back to the computer and look and get it back to them. The other thing we did was, and this was kind of a last-minute decision, the scorer, he bought a projector like a couple days before the race, and he projected the standings onto the wall in there.
Okay.
So it would show 10 names at a time, and it would rotate. So it'd be an order of where you were. So it'd be, you know, the top 10 and what lap they're on, and you know, it worked out well, other than it was kind of projected in a place where it's hard for the runners to see. They had to kind of, you know, crane their necks to the right to see what it was. So next year I think we're going to put it in a little bit better place.
Yeah, there's got to be some way to interface that to, like, the runner's Garmin or something.
Yeah.
One of your smart guys can do that.
Well, actually, you know, and I run indoors with a Garmin, and there's a lap button on the Garmin, and I click that at start-finish line every time I do a lap, and it not only tells you your lap time, but it tells you your lap number.
Right.
And I probably should have mentioned something to runners that maybe a lot of people don't realize their Garmin's work inside because they think GPS. Well, after, you know, a couple minutes of being inside, it asks you, are you indoors right now? And you just click yes, and then it shuts off the GPS, and it's pretty much a nice lap counter.
Great. So, all right. So this is fascinating to me still. So I'm thinking you're in a hockey rink, so the temperature in there has got to be, what, 40, 45?
Yeah, they claim it's 50, but it's usually closer to 40. You can see your breath.
Well, it's actually, you get layering in the rink. Is what I used to play a lot of hockey, so it's real cold close to the ground, and then it gets warmer as you go on, right?
Yeah, I guess, and it's also, it's dry in there, which is nice for runners.
Yeah,
it's dry, and it's really perfect running conditions temperature-wise. You know, it's a perfect, if for most people, and I'm more of a warm weather runner, but for most people they like 45 degrees, dry, no wind, you know, no sun in their face or rain or anything like that.
That's great. So, okay, water stops.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have water, plenty for?
No, yes, we did.
Yes,
we had, that was probably when the race finished. Over the course of the next couple of days, we got all kinds of feedback from runners, and the biggest compliment was the water area, how we ran the water area. And that kind of just fell together by accident. Not, there was a lot of discussion on what to do, but it kind of came together at the last minute. We had, we encouraged runners to bring their own water bottles. We did not have cups. And so if they didn't bring their own, we provided them with bottles. We did provide every runner with two bottles, regardless of whether they brought them or not, but they could use their own. And we wrote their bib number on their water bottle. And we had tables set up in one corner of the track, in a big, spacious corner. And this table is for bibs number 1 through 10. The next table is 20 through 30. The next table, 30 through 40, and so on. And basically the runners would tell the volunteers when they want their bottle filled up and what they wanted it with. Did they want it with Powerade or water? And we had a very good group of volunteers. Most of them are experienced marathon runners. Some of the real top runners in the area were volunteering, and so they were in tune with the runners at the water stations on how to get them their water and to make sure they had it when they needed it, and it worked out real well.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So, you're up in Milwaukee, so did you have the beer and the brats if they wanted it too?
No, but you know what? That might have been a good idea for a post-race party. There's a lot of that at races in Milwaukee. They usually have their beer here. But no, we didn't. Just a lot of goodies, though.
Do you find you're getting like any kind of hip or knee pain in any of these runners from going around in a circle in the same direction?
The winner told me after the race that the hip on his planting leg was getting a little sore,
yeah.
But it wasn't, it was from the turning, but it wasn't any more than, let's put it this way, it didn't injure him. You know,
right.
It didn't create an injury, it was a sore. You know, there's every kind of racing has its own issues. I mean, I'm sore after I run Boston, my quads are sore.
Right.
That doesn't mean they're injured or it's a dangerous place. It just means, the reason I'm kind of defensive about that is because there were a lot of skeptics before this race. And a lot of people said, people are going to injure their knees running on that. And a lot of experienced runners in the area who didn't seem to think that was a good idea to run a marathon in there. And I think we kind of proved them wrong. I mean, I don't know that. I don't know if maybe half the field is on the DL right now with knee injuries. But I know several of the people who ran it, and none of them were injured.
No, I'm just picturing it in my mind, you know, running on the track like that. And I know it puts a little lateral stress on your body that you usually don't have, right, if you're running
right.
Line. So.
Yeah.
So I'm sure people would go down there and train on the track, though, if they knew they had that race coming.
Yeah, in fact, a lot of people, I mean, we had people from all over the country here, so they obviously weren't able to train, but I'd say 25% of them are from the greater Milwaukee area, maybe even 35, I don't know. So they were able to train there, I'm sure.
So you had people fly in for the novelty of running the indoor marathon?
Oh, yeah, we had people from all over. We had this guy named Lawrence Macon from San Antonio, and I saw, in fact, he was just quoted in Runner's World, a recent issue of Runner's World. He's one of these guys who just travels all over for marathons.
Yeah, that's the guy with the camper.
He was in that article. He was quoted in that article. He was the one who was talking about the Walmart shower.
Yeah.
He wasn't the guy in the camper, but he's one of his buddies. But Lawrence, Lawrence is probably 65 years old, 70 years old. He ran the entire race with a smile on his face, 5 hours and 37 minutes worth with a smile on his face. After the race, he was so complimentary that this is one of the greatest, he goes, I've run 700 marathons or something like that. He goes, this is one of the greatest runs I've ever done. I loved it. So it's a great compliment. And he was leaving right after the race to go to the airport in his rental car to fly to Phoenix to run the Rock and Roll the next morning.
Yeah, I remember that guy. He runs, like, he's in the book of world records, right?
He may be, but yeah. just a neat guy. Then we had another guy who was 84 who ran the race, and it was his 101st marathon. He's a local guy. Didn't start running until he was like 70.
Yeah,
so,
I love him.
Some neat stories there.
So anybody complain about the hills?
No.
No.
Yeah, nobody's going to complain about that, I'll tell you.
Did you get any DNFs? They might pull up on the 90th lap and say, I can't do it anymore?
There were probably a dozen DNFs. Now, I didn't notice that until after the race. I mean, nobody required medical attention or anything, but I think people just started it and decided at some point they couldn't go on anymore and just dropped. It's a pretty easy situation as a race director to handle because they don't need to get a ride back to the start or the finish line or anything. They're right there.
Yeah.
But I didn't even notice it happening. I didn't notice till I looked at the results, and wow, it's a dozen people that didn't finish.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, it was an interesting event. It got more media attention, which is kind of what, I mean, obviously it's not a moneymaker when you've got, you know, 100 people. I think the registration fee was, I think, $75.
Yeah.
So, you know, $7,500 you're bringing in, and then subtract out expenses, and it's not a lot of money, and a lot of the proceeds went to the Pettit Center because they're a nonprofit to help resurface their track. So, you know, it was one of those things that was more of a publicity event by InStep Running and Walking Centers to get the word out about them, and I'm one of the owners of that. And I came up with the idea to have the indoor marathon. I'm like, it's a great publicity event. And it turned out to be. I mean, I got interviewed by all the TV stations. You know, the newspapers are out there. It got put on the wire. It made national news. Some of the video ran on national news. It's all over the place.
Excellent. Hey, so how do people, you going to do it again next year?
Yeah, we're definitely going to do it again next year. We don't have a date set. We're going to be setting that very soon.
So give people the links.
Yeah, indoormarathon.com. That's the check indoormarathon.com. As soon as we've got a date and registration information, we'll put that up. I'm guessing it'll probably be that same second or third Saturday in January next year, and we'll have the registration. It'll probably open, I'm going to say, in like July. We're anticipating it's sold out this year, but not right away. Next year, I'm going to bet it sells out a lot quicker.
Right. You got the press now. All right, I'm going to have to let you go.
Great.
Coming up on our time, but thank you very much for the talk.
Sure.
It's fascinating.
Yeah, good. Well, thanks for having me, Chris.
All right. We'll see you later, Chris.
Yep, take care.
Yep. Bye-bye.
All right, so, me 3 miles out, just crested the top of a really steep, long hill, and calf feels okay. I mean, I don't know what analogy to use. As long as I don't tore off, there's no sharp pain. It's more like a rusty gate than a broken gate, you know? If that makes any sense. Struggling for metaphors. But the fact that I'm running so fast, definitely carry an extra 10-15 pounds I usually don't have on a marathon training. Makes everything a little bit more fragile. So that's going to have to be on my next agenda. So anyhow, I don't feel so bad. I mean, I think as long as I don't toe off, don't jam it, I'm running a little fragile because I know if I stepped in a pothole wrong, or, you know, did something like stub my toe, might pop again. But it seems to be okay. So, let the celebration begin. I'll check in with you when I get back. I'm not going to run the hill. I'm going to avoid this next section of hills, go around it. I don't want to be tremendously foolish. Don't feel like I've been in the best shape of my life. Definitely not in good hill shape. So if I had to race a race right now, I'd get hammered. But I think I'm okay to run a race. Whew, all right. So I'm going to, we'll see. The proof is going to be whether or not the thing swells up after I'm done. I've got to figure out some way to put some ice on it. But I got a meeting and half the lunch, so yeah, we'll see. All right, man, checking out. Okay, that's it. I'm done. And hey, everybody in the gym. I looking in the window at the treadmill people. Nice day. Nice and warm, sunny. A lot of people out running. But yeah, so coming in last mile, actually my quad started to strobe again, and so I couldn't even feel the calf. I mean, I feel a little bit now walking, but I think, I don't know, unless it swells up, I think we're a go. If we get the green light, oh, if it doesn't swell up, I'll run home. Okay, don't be an idiot. I know it's hard. All right, man, on with the show.
All right, my friends, that's it. Another episode of the Run, Run, Live podcast in the can. And next week I'm interviewing By Costa Light from Twitter, and she is doing some sort of crazy 7 marathons on 7 continents in 7 something, I don't know, 7 sisters for 7 brothers. But she seemed like a nice person, so we're going to interview her. I'm probably going to try to get... I got some deals working, some deals brewing. I'm probably going to try and get McGilvery on to talk about the Boston Marathon if I can squeeze it, if he's got time. But I can always talk to him like 3 o'clock in the morning. He's always online. And what else? Run the Groton Road Race, www.grotonroadrace.com. Check out the shirts. They are fantastic. It's a great race. It's April 26th. All you guys online, love you guys, all my Twitter friends. What else is going on? Oh, yeah, my goon name. My goon secret code name is Mad Dog. Isn't that a great name? Huh? Mad Dog, that's my name. So, couldn't get my singlet for the race tomorrow. Not tomorrow, Sunday. Going on to run the Atlanta Marathon. Looks okay. Looks like the weather's going to be okay. Doesn't really matter. Just jogging it with Sean. And my calf. Hey, my calf's good. It feels okay. You know, I played this one like a pro. I went... And the Tuesday when it was swollen after I ran with Brad in Golden Gate Park, and I said, that's it, no more running. I bought some analgesic cream, and I was rubbing it in, sort of giving myself a massage while I was out in San Francisco a couple times a day. And then when I get back, I stayed off it for 7 straight days, and, you know, I could see it heal. It was good. Didn't test it. And then I went and had my massage with Jill on the following Tuesday night, 7 days later. And it was perfect because the swelling was down. She worked it out, started to run the next day. Got three days in this week. Everything's cool. So that's the way to do it. Play it like a pro. As soon as it's swollen, you know, check around. If it's swollen, don't run anymore. Give yourself time to heal or else you'll be 3 years later. So let's see. I got to get off the phone here. This is Mad Dog. Signing out. Hey, and I'll see you out there. I will. The music tonight is by the Peach Stealing Monkeys. That's my Atlanta tie-in. See? Peach Stealing Monkeys. And sort of a groovy alternative. So word of the day is groovy. All right? See ya, man.
It is just not your fault.
Thanks for listening to the Run Run Live podcast. Comments and suggestions can be made on our listener comment line at 206-339-7804 or via email at chrisrunner@runrunlive.com. That's our website. Go to the website, check it out for articles and my blog and other great stuff. If you would like to be on the show, or have a suggestion as someone you would like me to have on the show, drop me a line, and I will see you out there.
Run, run, live. The podcast for all your running needs.